Welcome to Eye of a Theory, the podcast where we explore intersections between physics, metaphysics, religion, society, consciousness, and being. I'm your host, Joe Blakely. Today's episode may be a little bit rambling because I am not writing it out beforehand. Doesn't require that much for me to kind of get in order, I guess. So hoping it won't be too tangential and crazy and easy enough to follow. But I wanted to talk about angels in this episode, and I've had experiences with angels, and they have appeared to me in different forms and in different ways. After I first had my, I guess you'd call it my, I'll call it like going forward, just my death and rebirth experience. Because you cannot have a rebirth without a death. People who say that they are born again, but they have not died first, have not been born again. You cannot put new wine into old wineskins. You have to give that up first in order for new wine to be put into it. So at any rate, that's what I'm going to refer to it as, is the death and rebirth experience. So after I had that, while I heard in a very subtle way, more subtle other than that Job and bicameral mind experience that I talk about in that one episode, it was really very subtle how I seemed to sense spirit. But after that experience, things became much more visible, was much more heightened. Everything was heightened. Every single one of my senses was enhanced, if you will. So I feel like I could see deeper, or maybe things just became visible. It's hard to know whether one thing comes from the outside, or it comes from you, or it comes from the outside, or if there is any outside. It's very, you know, once you get to this point, it's very, it's hard to describe and really pick a point of view. It's very difficult. However, the things that I saw around me afterwards, that first day, really right afterwards, when I described that experience of having the Holy Spirit around me and looking, opening up the Bible that day, I was also surrounded in that time by these little orbs, these little, I didn't know about this then, but you know, internet, yay internet. And so I know that I am not alone in seeing these, and that other people are also interpreting these largely also as angels, which is good, because that's how I interpreted them as well. And they were like ping pong ball size balls of light. And I have a theory that we perceive wings on angels because we just see their light trails, and so as they move, the light moves, and it's sort of like when you take a sparkler and you move it around and the light stays on your retina. It's kind of like that, and so you see this trail of light, and I think that's what people perceive as wings. And also they're like floating in the middle of the room, which is another, you know, it has flight, right? So it makes sense. I never really saw a lot of them moving so much. Like there wasn't a lot of whizzing around or anything. It was really, for these kinds of angels, it was really just kind of very softly floating in the room. And the most I'd ever seen around me was like around 7 or 8 or so. And they were all kind of lined up, and it was just a very, I didn't feel unsafe and so on. So that was really the first experience where I really kind of saw something floating around, I guess. I've had other experiences like that, completely different kinds of beings. I've seen all different kinds of things at this point. But this was kind of the first thing. And there was a time when I was going through a very, very bad time. This was not long after I had this death rebirth experience. And I was about to become homeless, and I was looking for some help. Like, I was living in a roach infested tiny little square of a room, and my father, who was very wealthy, lived on probably the most expensive street in the city, same street that Drake moved onto. And he was he had more than enough. And I wasn't looking for a handout, but I was about to become homeless. But I knew that I had, I'm getting stressed just thinking about it. This is like, so this is very triggering for me. This is definitely a source of pain for me. And I went out looking not for a handout, really, but for a computer, for help so that I can start my own business and make something happen so that I wasn't dependent on someone else hiring me or treating me bad in the workplace. And you know, he had so many computers, but all he used them for was porn. And he wouldn't give me any of them. He wouldn't give me anything. And so, without getting into more detail about that, I went home, back to this home that I only would have for only a couple of weeks longer before I was homeless. And I just burst out crying. I mean, it was all I could do to get home, to be able to release my emotions. And the minute I did, like, I just started crying, but almost immediately afterwards, I heard this voice in my head. And this voice in my head said, started rhyming to me. And actually, before I get to that quickly, I want to say, when I was up at my father's, my father is a lot like Donald Trump in many, many ways. And he was a very, very greedy man, and he was a transactional man. Nothing happened unless there was something in it for him. He did nothing out of the goodness of his own heart, because he didn't have any goodness in his heart. So everything was transactional, absolutely everything. And I had nothing. I had nothing to offer as his daughter for him to help me with a computer, but I knew I had to have something. So because I had had this experience now of having all this wisdom which I have shared with you on this podcast, these episodes, thought, well, I can share this with him. I can bring this to him. This is valuable, right? This is good information. And he was a miserable SOB, and I thought, okay, well, this is what I have to offer. And so naive. But when I got to the doorstep, I found there was like a little caterpillar, and I thought, oh, this is a sign. Maybe he'll turn into a butterfly. And I was still hopeful, but that was all shattered. At any rate, when I got home, I was in tears, and almost immediately, with those tears, like almost immediately, I heard this voice in my head that went like this: "There lived an old lizard who was a great wizard with nostrils that flared fire and smoke." And that made me laugh out loud. Like, just that little bit made me laugh right out loud. And it kind of broke all of the feelings that I was going through at that moment with this stupid little rhyme. And I thought, like, always the person, like, out for a story and something, I thought, oh, that there's something there. There's a story there. That's really cute. I'm gonna write that down. And the minute I got pen to paper to start writing it down, the rest of the story came, and I'd like to read it to you because it relates to everything that it was feeling all at once, and it just all came out, like, all at once. And so here it is. It's called Liz and Pip. Liz and Pip. There lived an old lizard who was a great wizard, with nostrils that flared fire and smoke. His home was a cave he had dug near a grave, and his temper was fierce when he woke. But though he was grumpy, it's 'cause his bed was so lumpy, he slept on his hoard of plenty. 10,000 things, gold, diamonds, and rings, cups and emeralds and carats of 20. Lizwiz had so much, but he walked with a crutch. Each step that he took hurt his back. One day, a small seeker, a mouse called Pipsqueaker, came scurrying by with a sack. Liz told of his woes, and he wept on Pip's toes. His sad story went on for hours. Pip then said that I might make all things right, and he told Lizwiz of his powers. Pip then said, if you cared, you should have shared, and if you wish to get better, you must. Liz said with a puff, I don't wish to be gruff. I don't like being mean and unjust. So they struck a deal. Liz's back would be healed if they each gave the other all they had. Liz gave up his treasure and gave it with pleasure, for he realized his hoarding was bad. Both agreed it was fair to exchange all their wares. Then Liz and Pip shook paws. Liz was taken aback when he opened Pip's sack and found a great pile of straw. And though Pip walked away with the riches today, Lizwiz was not at all mad, for he sighed, ooh and ah, on his new bed of straw, and from that day on never was sad. And so each was delighted when they were united, though some may think this tale unfair. But it all evens out. Both were happy, I've no doubt, 'cause it always feels good to share. So that story has so many layers for me in it. Obviously, personally, but I also think it has a lot of layers, period. Just about, you know, the idea of greed versus sharing. And when I used to tell it to my niece, particularly, I just love the questions. Like, whenever I've told it to kids, the questions that they have afterwards and how they think of it, because it makes us really question what is fair and what is just. And should somebody have it all? And should somebody else have nothing? And often, well, the question that gets asked almost every time is, Liz had nothing, Liz got nothing. And which is so sweet, right? Because that's obviously, they are now empathizing with Liz. And then the other question is, like, so what did Pip do with all of that stuff? And did he keep it all? And my answer was always, well, I think Pip knew how to share, and sharing was important to Pip. So I think Pip shared it, and just shared it really well. And so everybody had it kind of better, and everybody was happy. And everybody seems satisfied with my version of it, but I leave it to other people to figure out whether or not the story is fair and just, because in some ways you could say it is fair and just, but really it examines what is fairness and what is justice. I also think that the straw is a really interesting symbol, because, and I think of the story of Rumpelstiltskin too with it, and the idea of turning straw into gold. But for me, like, what I brought in my sack up to my father wasn't straw, it wasn't worthless. It was like gold to me, it was wisdom, it was the best stuff, the highest valued stuff. And he treated it like it was straw. He treated it like it was nothing and of no value whatsoever. So I think that the story that the what was in Pip's sack was appeared as appears as straw is interesting. I also think it's interesting that basically, you know, he has to lie in the bed that he has made in many ways. And it's just an interesting parable, and it is a parable. There's a lot of layers to it. I feel the idea of giving up things, of non-attachment, I think it goes to all of those ideas as well as just, you know, greed and how sharing really conquers that. And learning to share. And we teach our kids to share, you know. We teach children, you know, you should share, you should learn to share. And parents are the worst sharers of all. Like, they're just absolutely terrible at it. So, yeah, so that's that story. And that was really, I've done some illustrations for it as well. I've done actually about 7 versions of the whole book at some point in time. And an entire version was destroyed, and I think a second version may have been, I don't know, I've had so many things happen to my work over the years. But I'm thinking I'm going to try and get some of these kickstarted again. Now, I'll have you note, then I'm going to tell you the next story as well, and the next story, the origin story of it as well, also by the same angel. And in this next story, you'll hear that this angel kind of tells me not to censor the story. Because in the last story, Liz and Pip, when I said 10,000 things, gold, diamonds, and rings, cups and emeralds, and carats of 20, the original story, the way it was told to me, went 10,000 girls, gold, diamonds, and pearls, cups and emeralds, and carats of 20. And that's because my dad had a lot of women in his life and kind of fancied himself, I guess, the Hugh Hefner / Donald Trump type dude, whatever. Anyway, he had a lot of women and was really into porn, and it was really all about... everything was about sex, everything, everything. And so that was the original line. And I censored it because I was thinking this is going to be a children's book and I can't have, you know, all these women. And it's also related to just women being oppressed as well. So I couldn't have all of these, you know, 10,000 women, 10,000 girls. At any rate, that's how, why I censored that. But in this next story, I'm told that this story shall not be censored. And the name of the angel is also revealed. Name of the angel appeared in an original story that I did before this. This was already a long time ago. It was even before that. And it was one of the first stories that I ever wrote. And I wrote it for my nephew when he was first born. And... it was just this little story, but in it, it had like a break with this parrot, because it was about this pirate boy, and it had like a little parrot, and this little parrot would give like a little rhyme that, you know, you can find the treasure and just follow me. And so this parrot is named Real Macaw. And I always imagined it spelled like M-A-C-A-W or A-W-E, but I kind of macaw, because I think when I imagine it, when I see it, and when I imagine the narrator, I imagine it as a rainbow macaw. And that's, I think, because a long time ago, I remember seeing an image of, it was a National Geographic image of rainbow macaws, or the scarlet macaws, that were flying, and it was an aerial view looking down upon these flying macaws. And they looked to me, you know, after having seen an angel kind of moving, I thought, okay, that's interesting. That's kind of like looking at, they looked like angels in Doppler, you know, like if you imagine like redshift, blue shift, they kind of looked like angels with that Doppler shift, I that was how my mind works. So that's what I saw. And so this is how the narrator comes to me as a character named Rael McCaw. And this second story came to me a few years later, and it was right after the Heaven's Gate cult murders. And I know it's a weird, I mean, two very traumatic sources, I guess, for my story. But I was so bothered by the Heaven's Gate cult murders because it was really like a big F you to everybody who was still on Earth. It was saying, I got mine, I'm out of here. You know, so long, suckers. You know, I guess that was really the attitude of it. And to me, that was exactly the opposite. It was definitely not what gets one to heaven, in my opinion. And it bothered me so much. And because it was just everything that was wrong and with so many things. And but just sort of, that was like a symptom, like an effect of something that was much greater throughout society. And I guess it just reached me in a certain way. And suddenly, at some point in the evening, probably middle of the night, I don't recall at this point, but that's when they usually come, I get this story. Well, this is when I for sure learned the name of the angel, because he decides to appear and make his presence known and his name known. So, a feathered tale. Tales I tell them well, announced Rael McCaw. And this adventure I shall not censor, for it should be law. This fault must have a halt, it's something I despise. If truth be told, I'd be so bold to unravel all the lies. See, Crow alighted and was frighted on the garden tree. For Raven spoke of a haven where no more would he be. I know, the way to go, Raven said to Crow. Just leave this place of dark disgrace. No more agony or woe. Just say you're me, and you'll be free. You know, we look like twins. Just lie and hide your sighs. I'm sure they'll let you in. Dove came back. I'll have not that. Are we all not of a feather? Dove said, love comes from above, and not just in fair weather. See, I believe that to conceive, one must love one another. For way back when, and still, and then, you were and are my brother. Raven cawed. What are you, Odd? We'll change to make it better. Dove sighed. It's true. It makes me blue to see so many fettered. But there are some who've come undone and see what is to be. For it's hard to hide the heart inside, and truth will set you free. Crow said, you're wise in any disguise, and you, Dove, I believe. For your part reached to my heart, and now I too conceive. And so, Raven, who's misbehaven, do you wish to come along and join the birds who've heard the word and sing the heavenly song? Raven screeched, cursed, and beseeched, and got all in a fluster. But though he cawed, it's 'cause he's flawed, like a diamond without the luster. But bit by bit, he showed true grit, and he too was polished. He gleamed and gleamed and was redeemed, and his lies abolished. And so even Raven now makes a haven right where he belongs. And though he squawks, at least he walks in truth the whole day long. So I love that story. I don't think that I'm the right person to illustrate it for some reason, because I have a vision of it being illustrated by a Haida artist, a First Nations artist. I think it would be like a really good fit. But at any rate, maybe, I don't know. I have not done anything with it. It's a very heavy hitting story. These are really not children's stories. I don't really think of them as children's stories. I think of them as stories for adults, but told so simply even a child could understand. And this one especially, there's so much in it. Like there's so many layers in it, and every single line is so special. I mean, they all are, but this one is like, wow, kind of thing. The next one too is also amazing as well. But this one, like, there's a lot in there. It's jam-packed with a lot of deep stuff, and I think it's so clever. And I'm not crediting myself. I really am crediting this angel. It was really like a combination, like mixing some magical mixture in heaven of my emotions and my feelings about something and my perceptions on things, that were so sort of put to music, put to words, in heaven, and then given back to me. And so, I participated. I had the feelings, I had all of that experiences and so on, and saw things a certain way and perceptions. And God made a miracle out of it for me. And I really love that story for a lot of reasons. And the real macaw, so I always picture it spelt like Mac-aw, and it's hard to know whether it should have the E on the end, like as in awe. Like I always imagine it like a Scottish Mac, and then the aw, like a big A, and then a W, and the E can be with the E or without the E, and it depends on how you feel that, I guess, at a moment, right? But that's always how I imagined it being spelled as the character. And so this next story, this is really about climbing the proverbial mountain, which is sort of what we had talked about before. And this story, I used to so I used to joke. I would tell people, I would just talk, like this is years ago, I would talk with people about my life, just like a little bit of it. And they would say, "Oh my God, you have to write a book. You have to write a book about your life." And I used to joke that, well, if I did write a book, I'd have to call it, if I had known I was jumping hurdles up a mountain, I'd have worn better shoes. And so years later, this story comes to me, and I am wearing better shoes. I appear as a little goat. So clearly made for mountain climbing. And so here's the story. It's called Way to Go, Kid. There once was a goat who found she could float and loved to leap over rocks. She'd go on her way each brand new day, hoping there were no roadblocks. A great jumper was she, so she felt rather free to leap over all the sharp stones. And though she made all the jumps, she sure took her lumps, and in fact had broke a few bones. Her path was hard going, but there was no sign of slowing. Undaunted, she leapt up the mount. "What's a few stumbles?" she said with a mumble. "At this point, I think I've lost count." Goat continued to climb till she lost track of time, and then somehow the road seemed to breeze. She got into a groove, and she found she could move through the air like the wind through the trees. That bold little goat with the bell round her throat, swifter and faster she paced. Yet along the way, there were those who naysayed and thought her efforts a waste. They cried, "You are nuts," and "You're such a klutz." They saw not the great leaps she made. The birds thought it folly, but Goat found it jolly, and wingless she still made the grade. Sure-footed she rose over treacherous foes, determined to finish her quest. See, she had this feeling that up near the ceiling of Earth was a heavenly crest. So Goat kept on trying, her efforts undying, though the last leap was really a chore. But surmount it she did, and she grinned like a kid, and she jumped and leapt some more. At the crest was a place so full of grace, a beautiful pasture for grazing, and the view from this height was a glorious sight that can only be called amazing. Mighty the feat to get to this seat, as many who failed can attest. But Goat was humble, for she knew how she stumbled, and said, I just did my best. So go on your way, and go day by day, but find your own inner worth. We are born to be, and reach things we can't see, and find the heaven on earth. This was a story told to me by an angel, and that's one of my experiences of an angel. It was all three stories, same rhyming pattern, really so much jam-packed into them, all written within like 5 minutes, each of them. Like, just as long as it took me to read it out to you was about as long as it took for me to write it down, and without edits. I've read to you the original versions without me trying to make it work for publishers. So that's the original version of the story as it was given to me. And I hope you enjoyed it. I've seen other angels. I didn't see this angel. This is not an angel that I saw. I only heard. I guess it would be a little hard if I was distracted by seeing things at the same time. So that wasn't part of it. But yeah, so I've seen a bunch of different kinds of angels, some big, some small, some in human form. And I would say that this angel that tells me these stories is super special to me. So one day maybe I'll get them published. Any help anybody can give me to get things off the ground with any of my projects. I have so many that over time I've just had to move on and try new things. I did submit for publication Liz and Pip and Way to Go Kid to try and get them agented and published and so on. Nobody apparently likes a story with a message anymore, even though I think mine are sweet and a little bit like Liz and Pip is a little bit cheeky and like they're, I don't know, I don't get this world. I don't get it. Kids love them. And so I'm going to try and self-publish at some point in time. It just takes a lot of work and time to go back to these things. I'd like to redraw them again each, you know, for the sixth, seventh, umpteenth time, or at least recolor them. And again, any support that you can give, you can support me at ko-fi.com/Joe Blakely. And that's ko-fi.com/Joe Blakely. And I hope you liked the show. And if you did like the show and you enjoyed it and you enjoyed the stories, please leave me a 5-star review on Podchaser or on iTunes or wherever you can, and share it with anybody that you know. If you know of a publisher or anybody who would like to publish these, that would be great. If you want to take a look at some of my children's illustrations, you can always look at littlejolit.com. It's littlejolit.com. I think I have one illustration from Way to Go Kid up there, and I have another illustration from Liz and Pip up there, but I think I'd like to redo them all, as I said, and I've drawn them digitally, and I think I'd like to do them in watercolor instead. It just looks better, and but, you know, There's only, I keep on perfecting things and trying to make them better and better and trying to do these stories justice and trying to get some traction on it. And I don't get it. I just don't get it. So any help is welcome. Thanks again for listening, and until next time.